WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Galen Rowell has been described as a cross between Sir Edmund Hillary and Ansel Adams, an accomplished mountain climber with an artist's eye. His photographs often appear in National Geographic magazine, Sports Illustrated, and Outside. He's also produced 8 books combining text about his adventures with his photographs. His best-known book is Mountain Light, which was also the title of a traveling exhibit of his photographs. Rowell has said that when he shoots, he's more interested in the light than the subject matter. I asked him if the light is very different in the mountains than it is in the city.
It can be, because the light in especially high places can be through very clear air, and there can be all kinds of atmospheric effects that you never see in the city. And every once in a while, on a few days a year in a big urban area, you can see light that's as clear and beautiful as you might have in the mountains. But there's just so much more to see, so many more optical effects and all the rest that happen in the mountains and sometimes in the deserts too.
Is it hard to get the camera to see what you see?
Not if you understand light. An awful lot of the optical effects photograph really well. Rainbows just make wonderful photographs.
You have a great photograph of a rainbow. I'm thinking of the photograph Rainbow and Wild Rose. It looks as if you've actually found the end of the rainbow. The image is of the arc of the rainbow actually touching down onto the ground. Now, I realize this might be an optical illusion, but it's not one I've seen before outside of animation.
Well, what I usually try to do when I photograph a rainbow or any optical effect is not to do it by itself, but to connect it to something else, because that's what makes it interesting to us, to see a rainbow come out of the Potala Palace that the Dalai Lama lived in Lhasa. That's one of my favorite photographs. It looks like it's coming out of the golden roofs of his palace. Or to take a rainbow in Alaska and to line it up with the rose so that the colors of the pink rose and the green leaves match the colors in the rainbow, and it looks as if the rainbow's erupting right out of the rose. Those kind of things really intrigue me.
For the rainbow and wild rose, did you literally chase the rainbow to find that shot, find a place that looked like the rainbow's end?
I did. I sort of ran all over the place looking for something that would complement that rainbow, something that would make it look as if it was at the end of the rainbow and would have color and form that somehow worked with it. And I skipped dinner to do that. Everybody else in the group I was with had gone in for dinner, and I said, I'm going to hang out here with a rainbow.
There's another photo I want to ask you about. You have a photo of the first free climb up Astroman, which is a 1,400-foot rock overhang of the Washington Column. This is in Yosemite, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the climber going at what looks like it's nearly straight up on this rock mountain, and you seem to be alongside him with the camera. Where exactly are you?
Well, actually, that was with the climber who had made the first free climb, and I was doing a profile for Sports Illustrated of him. Ron Kalk is probably the best rock climber in America right now, and so rather than be a spectator, I thought I'd get the best pictures by really being involved. So I went with another climber and was tied on a rope with him, and we climbed as a separate team while Ron and his partner climbed on the mountain at the same time. But there was no rope connecting the two of us, and it had the impression that I was a fly on the wall just ahead of him.
I know how easy it is to become very self-conscious when a photographer is taking your picture, especially if it's going to be published in a magazine. What kind of reactions do you get from people who are in the middle of these life-threatening climbs, right? The last thing you want to do is distract them. But there you are, climbing alongside of them, taking pictures.
Well, that's a good point. And Ron has done it enough that he feels really comfortable. But if he's pushing something at his absolute limit, then he doesn't want a photographer there.
But those iffy moments are probably some of the moments you'd most like to photograph.
That's true. Then I would do it at more of a distance. I might be 10 or 20 feet away so that he wasn't at all consciously aware that I had a camera in his face with a wide-angle lens. And I try to be as unobtrusive as possible when I photograph climbers. I don't want to interfere with what they're doing. And if as much as I can be part of the process, if it's a ski mountaineering expedition or a hike or a run, whatever is happening in the outdoors, I don't want my photography to interfere with the primary activity that's going on. I don't want to set the whole thing up and have my coverage sort of change the character of what we're doing in the first place.
What do you take with you on a typical climb?
It depends on the kind of climb. It's sort of like asking what kind of clothes do you wear.
Mm-hmm.
If I go to something very fancy, I might wear a tux, but then if I go running, I'm just wearing shorts. And it's basically the same thing on a climb. Sometimes I have shorts and a little bag of gymnast chalk and a T-shirt, and that's it. And other times, if I'm climbing in the Himalaya, I might have 30 pounds of downfilled gear with windproof stuff on top of it and double boots and overboots on top of that so that I can get through the snows and the winds at 26,000 feet.
Mm-hmm. Do you sleep well when you're camping out on a climb?
Actually, I sleep quite well. Unless it happened to be a night where you get trapped out on a narrow ledge and the wind's blowing or something like that. But usually you have a lot more hours of the night to spend than you do at home. You don't stay up till midnight usually on a climb, and there are no lights and no music and all of that. So usually I have a lot better sleep when I'm out in the mountains on trips than I do at home.
Tell me about a night when you were forced to sleep on a narrow ledge.
Well, I can tell you one where I didn't sleep at all, and that was a calculated risk about 3 or 4 years ago on a mountain called Fitzroy in Patagonia. That's a spectacular spire coated with ice and snow, and we tried to climb Fitzroy on the upper part up and down in one day, and we were a little slower than we thought, but the weather was perfect, so we stayed up without sleeping bags, without any normal things to spend the night. It was 0 degrees Fahrenheit, and we stood in place on a little narrow ice ledge just below the summit and sort of ran in place all night to keep warm.
Hmm.
And actually, it turned out being fun. It was very drudgerous for a little while, and then as we're shaking our arms and running in place, and one of the guys has a great sense of humor, and he started doing a falsetto Tina Turner routine, shaking his arms and legs on the ledge. And we just broke out laughing, and from then on, we had a great time all night.
You've been in some very unusual places with your camera high up in the mountains. You've been to Tibet on a couple of expeditions. Did anyone ever think that you were actually a CIA agent photographing secret places?
A couple of times, and actually I've had some run-ins with the Chinese government in Tibet, where a couple of years ago I passed a picture of the Dalai Lama to some nomads in a tent in a very remote area of Tibet. And the driver reported it to the government, and I was supposedly tried in absentia for sedition in Beijing, and I had to write letters to the ambassador in Washington, D.C., and make all kinds of apologies and say that my act was not a planned overt political act. And since then, I've decided to take a much stronger stand and not just be an adventurer, but take a stand on Tibet, where I've been 5 times. And I'm working on a book right now to come out in the fall of 1990 called My Tibet, with my photographs from 5 journeys, with quotations for each photograph, and essays by the Dalai Lama.
When you say you're taking a stand about Tibet, what is your stand?
Well, I think that Tibet is an independent nation that is now occupied by the People's Republic of China, and that it should have a right to self-determination.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think in a way people distrust photographs, beautiful photographs. And here's what I mean. You know the expression, pretty as a picture? It means less than real, you know, like too good to be true. Do you ever think about that in relation to your own photographs, which are really, really beautiful?
Yeah, that gets us into all kinds of areas. It's very easy to single out the most beautiful thing and to leave out the trash dumps or the telephone wires or any of the other stuff. And a photographer can do that. And I try to cover all the angles, but certainly if I do a book that's of beautiful pictures of beautiful places, then it has been edited out. And that is a problem. What I absolutely don't want to do is to manipulate an image away from what I see and to have any tricks like double exposures or changing colors or things that can be done with a computer to move things around in an image, because that, I feel, destroys the credibility of photography.
Let me ask you about one photograph, and this was a photograph of a cabin in Alaska, and the colors were so it was almost, this is a cliche, but it was almost like a painting. And I couldn't tell whether this was through filters you got these colors or whether it was really like that. The Alaskan night looks blue, and the light inside this cabin looks yellow.
It definitely is that way.
Very Maxfield Parrish kind of colors.
That's true. It's a long exposure of several minutes by moonlight to get the bluish color of the snowy landscape. And meanwhile, there's the glow of a fire that's very yellowish inside the cabin that's lighting the inside of the cabin. And I really look for that juxtaposition of warm and cold light. And the edges of light fascinate me. You know, the edges of form are the most fantastic things in the natural world, where the ocean meets the land, the beaches and the waves, rather than the middle of the ocean or the middle of a continent, where the land meets the sky, the tops of mountains. Those are exciting places. And the edges of light are equally exciting, where warm light meets cool.
Well, Galen Rowell, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us about your photographs.
Thank you very much.
Galen Rowell's latest books of photographs are The Art of Adventure, published by Collins, and The Yosemite, published by Sierra Club Books, with text by John Muir.